Good afternoon, everybody. I welcome everyone to the Senate Health and Social Services Committee and call it to order at 1:45 p.m. on Tuesday, February 22nd. Committee members present today are Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Reinbold, and myself, Senator Wilson. Senator Begich is excused. We do have a quorum to conduct business today. This afternoon, we have two items of business. First, we'll consider an appointee from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board, Kevin Feynman. Then we'll hear introduction and take invited public testimony on Senate Bill 169, Smoke Dampers and Smoke Control Systems, sponsored by Senator Costello. First, we will go to Mr. Feynman. I'm sorry, Kevin, if I mispronounced your name.
It's Kevin Feynman. Thank you, Chair Wilson.
Thank you, sir. And if you want to place yourself on the record, give a brief introduction of who you are and why you are wanting to be appointed to this board. And if you can tell us what board seat you are seeking, that would be helpful. And you may begin when you're ready.
Okay. Again, thank you, Chair Wilson, and to the fellow committee members. For the record, I am Kevin Feynman, F as in Frank, I, M as in Mary, O, N as in Nancy. I was appointed to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees this past July, pending confirmation, and I thank you for the opportunity today to introduce myself. I came to Alaska 44 years ago. I lived in Nome for 11 years before finishing my business accounting degree in 1991. I am a tax preparer, and I and my business have been based here in Anchorage for the past 31 years. I and my wife, Karen McCreary, have been married for 26 years. She is a physician, OBGYN, here in Anchorage. We both try to contribute to our community and neighborhood and charities and try and be involved and supportive throughout our community and state. I guess personally, a reason why I would like to be on the Board of Trustees is that the Alaska Mental Health Trust is such a unique organization. There is some strong leadership and incredible caring staff, especially on the program side, and I'm very impressed with them. I would welcome the opportunity, if confirmed, to serve trust beneficiaries, as these are our fellow citizens. They're our friends, our neighbors, and in some cases, even our own family members. Serving on the trust would offer an impactful way to draw on some of my own experiences and to work with the other fine fellow trustees and that staff that I spoke of to present ideas, improvements, how to maybe allocate and be efficient with resources and innovation to help improve the lives of all the beneficiaries. I believe if we can improve the lives of beneficiaries, that indeed improves the lives of all Alaskans. I'm open for any questions. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Kevin. Can you state which if this is a board specific seat? Are you a consumer seat, a resource seat? What seat are you filling for this board?
Well, there are 7 board of trustees. So I believe I would be one of those 7. I've actually already been sitting for the past 6 months, and Chair Halterman has appointed me upon confirmation that I would be in charge of the committee for audit and risk.
Okay. Thank you. Any committee members' questions? Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Feynman, for your willingness to serve, and I can see reviewing your resume, you're strong in the areas of accounting, budgets, those kind of things, and it sounds like that's a big part of your role. I'm just wondering, though, knowing that the Alaska Mental Health Trust has a responsibility to various categories of beneficiaries, what your experience has been with those communities. I'm looking through. I see you were involved with some nonprofits, and you were a basketball coach and things like that, but what is your experience and your connection with the population, the beneficiary population that the Mental Health Trust serves.
Yes, through the chair, thank you, Senator Hughes, for your question. I'm going to say that probably one part of it is that, as you can see, I lived for a number of years, 11 years actually, out in Nome. And one of the issues that's of personal concern to me is along the lines of suicide prevention. I've been touched by that several times, as I think many of us in the state have been. And as I've kind of listened to some of the senators and legislators in the past, there is some concern of, are we getting far enough out past the hubs and in truly into rural Alaska with a reach to those that are in need. I kind of feel like, at least from my years of living out there, I might bring some abilities to do that or some understanding maybe. And I guess that's my answer.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Well, thank you. We have a terribly high rate, so I'm glad you're clued into that, and appreciate, again, your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Mr. Feynman, since you have been sitting on the board for the past 6 months now, you have a pretty good, hopefully a good grasp on some of the needs and issues. What do you say is the role and responsibility of the Alaska Mental Health Trust help contributing in the financing of Alaska Psychiatric Institute?
Yes, I've seen some of the issues on that. I am not averse to the Mental Health Trust being involved in that funding. I believe that the collaboration between, I guess I would say, the governor's office administration and the Mental Health Trust, I'd like to see that worked out and be a bit more cohesive. I guess I'd even like to think I could bring some of that to learn how that would be. We have funded some things that affect API. I believe you're aware of that in the past. And I guess I would be in favor as long as it fits in under the protocol, and definitely it would help beneficiaries. So I would support that.
Okay. Thank you. And not seeing any other questions, I do have another question here. you list in your activities some campaign activities. Do you plan to participate in campaigning activities this year?
I was the treasurer for the Dunleavy campaign in 2018. I am currently the treasurer for Dunleavy for governor, and I haven't been asked to remove from there. If there's a conflict, I certainly would.
Okay, thank you.
Can we take a brief at ease?
Yeah, brief at ease. All right, thank you, Kevin. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll now open up this public testimony. Anyone here in the room would like to testify on the appointee for the Alaska Mental Health Trust, Kevin Feynman? Seeing none, and seeing no one online, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any final questions from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In accordance with Alaska Statute 39.05.080, the Health and Social Services Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointees be forward to a joint session for consideration. Alaska Mental Health Trust Board of Trustees, Kevin Feynman. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions.
All right. We'll go ahead and take an at ease, sign the paperwork. Well, thank you again, Mr. Feynman, for making yourself available to for the committee. And we'll get ready for the next presentation. At ease.
being victims in a fire. And so I will turn it over to my aide, Melody Wolterdink, who's the Labor and Commerce Committee aide and also carrying this bill.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Costello, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, this is Melody Wolterdink, staff to Senator Costello, and I will start with the sponsor statement. Fire dampers, smoke dampers, combination fire smoke dampers, and smoke control systems all work to prevent the spread of fire and smoke in public and commercial buildings. These critical life safety systems allow individuals to exit the buildings with significantly reduced risk of smoke inhalation, and they also keep pathways clear of smoke for fire rescue crews. When a fire breaks out in one room, fire and smoke dampers seal the ductwork, which prevents it from transferring rapidly through the walls to many other rooms. Smoke control systems, they pressurize the air in stairwells, and that keeps smoke from entering so that building occupants can safely egress, and then firefighters can ingress into the building. Most fire-related fatalities are actually not caused by burns, but are caused by smoke inhalation, and these systems are installed to prevent that. But when fire and smoke dampers go without inspection or testing for many years, the motors and mechanisms can fail, and that often results in actually sealing that ductwork shut. And to solve the problem of these blocked air ducts, HVAC technicians and maintenance crews who aren't trained in exactly what these systems are meant to do will often prop those seals open. And that ends up rendering the systems completely ineffective in the case of an actual emergency. Senate Bill 169 would direct the Department of Public Safety to adopt regulations that require the inspection and testing of fire dampers, and smoke control systems by an individual who has a current fire and life safety certification issued through the program accredited by the American National Standards Institute. I'm happy to walk through this sectional as well.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. Again, for the record, this is Melody Wolterdink. So starting in Section 1 of Version A, that starts at page 1, lines 5 to 12, this amends Alaska Statute 1870.080B to add a subsection B2, and that allows the Commissioner of Public Safety to establish regulations and for the Department of Public Safety to charge reasonable fees for the inspection and testing of fire dampers, smoke dampers, combination fire and smoke dampers, and smoke control systems to determine compliance with regulations established in Section 2 of the bill. So Section 2 starts at the bottom of page 1 and then goes on through most of page 2 as well. So what, and this is the bulk of the bill here. And so what this does is amends Alaska Statute 1870.080 to add a subsection C, and that states that the Department of Public and Safety must adopt regulations regarding the inspection and testing of fire dampers, smoke dampers, combination fire and smoke dampers, and smoke control systems that are consistent with the National Fire Protection Association's 2021 and 2022 published standards for fire doors, smoke control systems, and smoke door assemblies. And then moving on to 1 through 4 in that same subsection C, this specifies that these regulations must apply to mental institutions, penal institutions, group residential facilities, immediate care facilities, nursing homes, hospitals, schools, public assembly buildings, state and municipal buildings, and any other buildings in which such systems have been installed. These systems aren't common for, say, a single family home. These are typically in large public buildings or multi-residential buildings. And then subsection D is also added, and that specifies that the regulations adopted under that previous subsection C must require that the inspection and testing of these systems are done by a fire and life safety inspection program of either the state or a municipality, or by an individual who has that accreditation I mentioned in the sponsor statement from the American National Standards Institute. It further specifies that any findings of noncompliance need to be submitted to the owner and the state fire marshal. And then Section 3, which is on page 2 toward the bottom, lines 26 to 30, This is amended to state that the fees that are established under Section 1 of this bill for checks and inspection of fire dampers and smoke control systems are accounted for separately, and appropriations from those receipts are not made from the unrestricted general fund. And finally, at the bottom of page 2, this provides for an effective date of January 1st next year. Okay. Thank you.
Also available online for questions, we have Richard Boothby, our Alaska State Fire Marshal. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Reimbold.
Thank you. I can't tell if this is on. I'm sure you guys can hear me. First of all, how much does the training cost?
The training you get from what we're asking for. I'm sorry.
No, Mr. Shurig, if you can just state your name for the record each time. Yes.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Jen Shurig, and that was directed towards you. Yes. So the training can vary on the cost. Anyone can get an ANSI accredited training, and it's really, you know, it's hard to tell how much it would cost for a particular entity. I know our international union spent around $25,000 to get an ANSI accreditation. That could vary from, you know, depending on how many people they have to train, but this training is available for anyone. But I can't say how much it would cost someone to get the ANSI accredited training.
Senator Casella? Senator Casella?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So I think the question has to do not with how to become an accredited trainer, but how much an Alaskan or some individual would have to pay in order to be certified.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, thank you. So, I have to say through the record every time and say my name. Okay. So it'd be a lot like a same cost of what a journeyman license to the municipality would cost. It'd be $125 a year to renew that certification, and that's not necessarily through the contractor. You know, either the contractor would pay that or the individual. Generally, it's the individual that renews his license.
All right, Senator Reimbold.
Okay, so I think we're almost there. So yeah, it was the individual that I was after. It's not just a license. Don't they need to go through some sort of a training, or did I miss something in her presentation?
Correct. Yeah, they would have to go through training, minimum of 16 hours, and then take a test. And what that would cost, I know there is out-of-state companies that can do that work, but I don't have a number for that.
Yes. Senator?
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out, I know you said a union. Is this union training, or is this a company training? I mean, what is...
So if you're part of a union, we part of the package is a 16 cents an hour is what the sheet metal workers pay to make this training eligible to them. That's what they're donating. Non-union, it would be a different number. I'm not sure what that would be.
Melody?
Thank you. For the record, Melody Welterding, through the chair, Senator Reimbold. My understanding is that many of these unions, through their dues, the union members have this training provided to them at the cost of their dues. It's not an additional cost.
The last one, can I
ask? Yes, Senator Reimbold.
Okay, thank you. And if you guys have follow-up information through your office, that would be helpful. Just trying to wrap my head around who's benefiting, who's going to not, you know, is this a pro-union bill? It doesn't matter one way or another. It's just nice to know that information and if it's going to drive costs up. But in general, having a package of roughly how much it costs, you know, for each trainee, and then also in regards to is it going to increase the cost of the entity that owns the facility? That's where that was eventually where I was trying to go. Is this going to increase the cost of government? Like if it's a whole bunch of state buildings that have to be inspected now with a highly trained person of, well, 16 hours, I'm not sure you consider that highly trained, but more trained, you know, that would be important information. So I think I've kind of got it on the record, but I would like them to have the opportunity, even if it's not today, to follow up.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
He has something to say.
For the record, Jen Schurig, through the chair, Senator Reinbold. So we wrote this bill to make it so it was, you know, anyone can get the training, not just unions. We wanted to make that. I want to make that very clear. Not a pro union bill. We want to make this training eligible for everyone. For a contractor to fly up, let's say an instructor, right? There's a few different entities that apply this training, you know. So cost of airfare, cost of hotel for 3 days of training, and then an hourly wage, you know, let's say $100 an hour. That's what someone would pay, you know, to get their company non-union get certified. As far as costing, you know, the state more money, I find that doing this, we've already spent millions of dollars to install these systems. And it's my experience through doing this that a lot of these systems are not working. So if you spend the money to install these systems and not maintain them, it's a loss. So I find this as a cost savings and not a burden or a cost to the government or state buildings. If you know, it's just like buying a car and not putting oil in it. If you're not maintaining that vehicle, then it's a loss. It's much cheaper to pay for an oil change than to pay for a new engine or a new car.
And I think some of these questions might be through the presentation too.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Hughes?
Yes, thank you. I have a couple of unrelated questions, Mr. Chair. And the first one is for Melody. In the sponsor statement, it mentions one of the problems happens when HVAC technicians and maintenance crews prop the seals open, not understanding what they're for and what they're designed to do. And that actually surprises me because the V in HVAC is for ventilation. It seems like they would be trained, if they have certification, not to create a problem. Do you happen to know if this is part of their training, because or for certification purposes, if they have to have knowledge about these dampers?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, again, for the record, this is Melody Walterdink. So our understanding is that they are trained to install these specifically HVAC systems, but these life protection safety systems are not in that training that they get for making sure that we're comfortable in the rooms. And so that's part of this problem here. Right now, already, these systems do need to be inspected, but the people who are allowed to inspect them aren't receiving training in what they're actually doing. And so that's how you end up with someone who is presented with a problem that is, we're not getting AC to this room, goes and props that open, not understanding that actually this is a separate system. The motor has failed, and in the case of a fire, propping it open will fill that room with smoke.
Yes, Senator Hughes?
And just as follow-up, and I don't know if the bill sponsor has thought of that, but, you know, if we're really talking about life safety for school children and building in our school buildings and things, it seems like it might be important that the HVAC certification require some training in this so that they're not actually creating the problem. And so that's just a side note, and I don't know if it would fit in this bill, but you know, I'm sure the motors and things like that can wear out, but when they're physically propping those up, when they're supposed to flap down, that's a problem. And my second question has to do, on page 2 of the bill, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 with all types of buildings that have to be covered. And a lot of these are public buildings, but we also have some private sector buildings. Because anything in number 2 for the public assembly can include churches. It mentions worship. It mentions entertainment, which could be movie theaters, bingo halls, all the buildings. In the word amusement, maybe all the buildings at the fairgrounds. And I'm not sure. I guess one of my questions would restaurants and bars fall under that? Because we are, I just want all of us to recognize that this we're going to add an added cost, and it can be for important things, just like you mentioned, oil and or putting oil in the car is cheaper than replacing the car. And of course, when we're talking about the value of human life, I can understand that. But we are actually asking private companies. It looks like the Department of Public Safety is going to charge a fee for these inspections. So I just wanted to highlight that and then ask. We had questions about the cost of training. What kind of fees might a church, for instance, incur having to pay for these inspections?
Yeah. Senator Costello?
Thank you. So on page one, the non-bolded words are already the statute. So if you look at the list, the mental institution, penal institutions, the hospitals, schools, nursing homes, the type of buildings that were just mentioned, the commissioner already establishes regulations that deal with fire and life safety plans checks made to determine that they are within compliance. So I think perhaps the department might have to answer in terms of, would you have a plan and then do the inspection right away, unless the fair is actually constructing buildings that people are meeting in, which I don't see that. I mean, I don't think that would affect, that this bill would affect some of those entities.
Before you bring on the fire marshal.
Yes, Sandra Hughes.
Well, and because in Section 1 it allows fees, including for the damper inspections, so that they're already having to, I guess, they can be charged already for just the general inspections, but now we're adding the damper, so those fees might go up. And so I guess I think for all of us to understand how much those fees might go up. And then just out of curiosity, because number four mentions other buildings, our homes, do residents ever have these damper systems, or are they typically in larger facilities?
Right.
In other words, are homeowners going to also maybe incur this fee?
For the first part, I think, of the questions, and Mr. Boothby, our state fire marshal, are you online? Richard Boothby?
Oh. I'm online.
There you are. Hi, did you hear the question from Sandra Hughes?
Could you repeat it?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being with us, Mr. Boothby. Just wondering, right now, the Department of Public Safety Commissioner can set fees for the inspections, and now we're going to add the dampers to that inspection. Do we expect the fees to go up? And then how much might they go up for a facility? And is there a range depending on size? And then and would this possibly include homeowners who might be charged this fee?
Through the chair. Short answer would be right now, through statute, for the record, this is Richard Boothby, State Fire Marshal. Right now, as the statute reads, we have the authority to charge for plan checks. So that would be the plan review portion of these dampers, fire controls, or smoke control systems. At this time, we don't have the authority to charge for inspections. As we read this, it depends. Our personnel do not have the certifications that are required at this time, so we would have to get further education for our people to allow this, or for us to do this. The second thing would be locations. If for rural Alaska, you're talking, to get to the facility. These are schools all across the state. So, yes, there could be increased fees, costs to it. Right now, the current code that we're on, the 2012 as well as the 21 code, already have provisions in these codes for these to be completed. It's not as specific to a training part.
Senator Hughes?
So to drill down a little more specifically, could you give us a – well, okay, I'm going to show how naive I am. Okay, so the plans that you're already able in the current statute to charge fees for, those are when a building is first in the planning stage and being built, I'm assuming. But now we're talking about inspections and testing over time to make sure these damper systems are working. So it sounds like your staff would have to have training and be certified in order to inspect them. And so my question is, once they become trained and certified, if this were to pass, what would be the range of fees from whether it's school buildings in Anchorage to a building out in a very distant rural part of the state?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, that is correct. To this date, we do not charge for any inspections, so this would be the first inspections that we'd be allowed to charge for if this is passed. You're correct. We would need additional training to meet the letter of this. And there would be a fee for us to travel to do those and potentially to hire staff to assist us. At this time, we have the five deputies who are already doing the normal inspections. And then to add this to it, we would have to do an analysis to determine how many there are and if the amount of people that it would take to do that.
Okay, follow-up. I'm not getting dollar amounts, but that's okay. Maybe it's just hard. I guess we can estimate airfare and then labor. And I guess one final part of my question that didn't get answered yet, are there any of these damper systems in homes and residents that would be also subject to a possible fee and needed for these inspections to occur?
To the chair, for single family homes, no. The R4 homes, or the, if you would, the assisted living, there may be a potential for that if there's fire barriers, firewalls involved. So potentially there, definitely in the I or the institutional and the other ones that were mentioned, they would all have some.
All right.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the presentation here to make sure we have enough time to cover that and open up for testimony as well for Senate Bill 169. So I think Mr. Scherr, get the floor is yours.
Thank you. For the record, Jen Scherr, I'll be doing a PowerPoint presentation. Just a brief background of mine. I've been a sheet metal worker for 20 years. The past 7 years, I have been test and inspecting fire smoke dampers and smoke control systems, mainly in hospitals. Through my findings, I'm finding, you know, I'm not the first person to do these inspections, but as I'm doing them, I'm finding a large fail rate in these systems. Part of that, I believe, is the lack of training that these other contractors did not have. The reason why I was successful is I did have training. You know, I went through training, had to take a proctored exam to prove that I had retained the knowledge of that training, and then I continually had continual education to for the ever-growing industry, evolving industry. So, without further ado, I will start the presentation. What we have here is what is the fire life safety ecosystem? So there's eight components. Each plays a critical role in protecting the property. You have government responsibility, development and use of correct codes, reference standards, investment in safety, skilled workforce, code compliance, preparedness, emergency responders, and informed public. The big break and what is affecting this ecosystem is the skilled workforce, I believe, and that's what this bill is going to help help fix, right? To mandate that the people that are doing these and testing and inspecting these systems have proper training and have proved they've retained the knowledge of that training through certifications. So here's an example of a fire damper. A lot of these have remote switches to show that they indicate that they are open or closed. In this scenario, the fire damper, some linkage broke, and the remote indicator showed that it was fully closed, but it only covered half of the damper. So when it was closed, because the link was broken, half of it was still open. All the more reason to have hands-on and eyes on and watching these things actuate. You can't just watch the motor from below or see it from a panel. You need an access door, a technician on site to look through and watch it actuate, open and close, do a proper inspection. This is stuff that they teach you in the training.
Yes, Senator Casella.
Thank you. And I assume you took these photos, and you probably don't want to share what building it is, but could you just describe what type of building that this photo was taken in?
This was most likely a commercial building. I did take some of these photos. These are our, you know, I wouldn't consider this a hall of shame, but there is some hall of shame pictures in here, and some of my pictures are in there. But these are taken from various different technicians all over the country. I'll let you know when I get to the ones that I took. So here we have some data cables running through a fire damper. This is common to see. It's an easy shortcut for another technician, someone trying to get their job done fast and efficiently. And it showcases why we need to do these periodic inspections, you know, to find things like this and fix it, because this happens frequently. Just like in this picture, you see you have some plumbing pipe running right through it. There's no way that damper can shut and do its job.
And just out of curiosity, in those type of situations where you have cables or plumbing, who's liable for that? Is it the building owner? Is it the person who installed the cabling? Or
yeah, I would say that it's the person who installed it. Like this fairly new cabling, they would have to be called back and, you know, back charged for that. Hopefully you're finding this in a timely manner, but unfortunately sometimes you don't, and it's hard to backtrack who did the work, but all the more reason to follow up, do due diligence, and make sure you have good records.
Thank you.
So here we have a fire damper that's zip tied shut. This is this looks just like what happened in the 1980 MGM fire, where 85 people died. There's pictures in that report of you know, links missing and them being wired open, screwed open. Very common to see this type of thing. If this person had the training, when I teach a class, I tell, you know, you describe what a fusible link is, what types of degrees do they melt, most commonly 165 degrees, where you can get these links if one breaks. This is something that you learn through this training, so you can make these easy fixes rather than, you know, and the nameplate's right there. All you had to do was Google that nameplate. You could find the fusible link that that needed to do that. But this is a very common thing you see when you're inspecting. Here you have a picture. The naked eye, it looks like it was installed correctly. But what you're seeing is all the links have been removed, but because the framework that the damper sits in is not square. So you have a damper that's skew, and it's not allowing this fire damper to shut. Like I said, if you were an inspector, you'd walk by it, you'd see it looked like it was installed correctly, but you don't know that until you actually get physical hands and remove that link and allow that curtain to shut. You will see that none of them are shutting because it's not square. Here's one of my pictures. This is a picture I took here in Alaska. Maintenance guy had used a cup to prop the fire damper open with. This is fun. How long ago do you think? This is way before my time. This beer can pop top. So it had been there for a long, long time. Longer than 40 years, I'll tell you that. But another thing you see. Here we have a rock. This is one of my personal pictures. That will never burn up in a fire. Definitely not UL listed either. Here you have a fire alarm technician ran his conduit through the fire damper. So there's different aspects of the life safety system, right? You have fire alarm, you have sprinkler systems, then you have the HVAC fire life safety system. And it's three separate trades. And it's important to realize that even the fire alarm guy didn't realize that this is, you know, even though it fits in the same, category of life safety, but he didn't know he wasn't supposed to do that, apparently. From afar, it looks like the fire damper looks good, but if you take a closer look at this, you'll see that this fire damper has been wired shut. The fusible link, over time, rusted, came apart. And they just use a piece of wire. Same scenario in 1980 MGM Grand Hotel fire. So why are these systems so important? According to the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, smoke travels at 120 to 420 feet per minute during an active fire. Statistics show that approximately 70% of all buildings-related deaths are associated with smoke inhalation. Most victims are not located in the same room as the fire. HVAC systems penetrate every occupied space in a building, potentially could convey fire, lethal smoke, toxic gases throughout the structure. Operation of dampers in an HVAC system can control flow of movement in these items is critical to the safety of occupants within any structure. You know, like we stated before, no one really burns to death in a fire. They die from smoke inhalation well before. Once again, I'll reference the 1980 MGM fire. Fire started in the first floor, and smoke was able to go through the mechanical shafts, and most people were perished in the upper levels. These systems are designed to keep smoke out of the safe path of egress. When they left their hotel room, they were in a hurry. Fire alarm was going off, shut the door. Door shut behind them, they forgot the room key, and their safe path of egress, the hallway, was filled with smoke.
Senator Hughes.
Yeah, quick question. You've mentioned that hotel fire. How many people died in that fire? Just
85 people died, 117, I think, were injured, including 14 firefighters.
Please continue.
So here we have a video. And won't play. Okay. Well, basically, this video shows how it's really not that great of a video. It just shows how what can happen, how the smoke travels through the ductwork, and that's exactly what will happen to if these systems aren't working. Like I stated before, you know, ductwork passes through every single part of the building, right? And if these systems aren't working and shutting in the event of a fire, the smoke will travel through the ductwork and go through it. So the extent of the problem, we go into a study. Dr. James Milky did. And I can talk about it through my pamphlet here. You guys have all seen this. But Dr. James Milky is a professional chair of Department of Fire Protection and Engineering at the James Clark School of Engineering at the University of Maryland. Recently completed a study to determine the reliability of the HVAC dampers, smoke dampers, combination fire smoke dampers, and smoke control systems. So basically what he did, he compiled information from multiple contractors all over the U.S. And the study concluded that 1,441 buildings existing and newly constructed that contained 170,354 dampers, smoke dampers, and combination fire smoke dampers. Of these installed dampers, 81,038 were in need of some type of repair. So, huge study all over the U.S., and the end result he came up with was about 47.5% needed some type of repair. Just a brief background on James Milky. He is a fire safety engineer. If you're a fire safety engineer, you probably have a couple of his books he helped write and has most likely attended some of his lectures. He's very highly respected in the industry. So we go into local code. Yeah, I don't have my news. It's okay. Basically, so this is already code. We go off of the International Fire Code, which goes off the NFPA standard. The code states that, you know, each fire damper will be looked at and inspected in the commissioning process, right? And then a year after that, and then every 4 years after that, with the exemption of hospitals, is every 6 years. So to go back to the cost, fire alarm and sprinkler systems are on a annual inspection. These are on every 4 years. So initial install, year after that, and every 4 years. So it's essentially a quarter of what people are already spending to test and inspect their sprinkler systems and fire alarm systems. And it's my experience, a lot of these people, all these inspections aren't happening. So it's kind of like a stop sign in your neighborhood where people are just running through it and not abiding by the stop sign. This just shows that Juno goes off of the 2012 IFC code. Anchorage was going off the 2015, but just recently stopped in 2018. Fairbanks is going off of 2015. I didn't have that slide. So there are three required. This talks about the testing. There are three required tests of the installation, testing, and maintenance of fire smoke damper combination fire smoke dampers. Completed pre-occupancy after the damper is installed. This test is focused on the damper. Acceptance testing. This has to do with new construction. Completed occupancy after the damper is installed and the associated systems, both HVAC and FLS controls, are operational. Okay. It goes back to fire dampers shall be tested 1 year after acceptance testing, every 4 years after that, except for buildings containing a hospital, which is every 6 years. I get this question a lot. Why is it a longer period of time in hospitals? Hospitals like to be clean. It's very intrusive. And maybe they have better lobbyists. I really can't answer that question better than that. Testing procedures include visual confirmation of proper operation, allows for remote inspection if damper is capable, and after initial visual inspection. It gets into, you know, there's fire dampers, smoke dampers, 105 covers smoke, and it's the same testing frequency. 1 year after initial installation, every 4 years after that, with the exception of 6 years in the hospital.
Senator Casella.
Thank you. And you had mentioned earlier that it's the heat in the damper that triggers the motor to close the damper. Is that with just the fire damper, or is it triggered somehow differently with the smoke damper?
So the difference between a fire damper, smoke damper, and combination fire smoke damper. A fire damper is a mechanically triggered mechanism that has a link that melts at 165 degrees. There's no electrical power going to it. A smoke damper has a motor that is connected to the fire alarm system, right? And so if a pull station's pulled, or a smoke detector goes off, it sends a trigger to the motor to shut. A fire smoke damper is rated for both, where it has a motor that's connected to the fire alarm system, but also has electronic fusible link that is like a high limit switch that will pop at 165 degrees or 212. Those are the main differences between the three.
So is the combination fire smoke damper, is because it's obviously more mechanically technical, does that tend to be to break easier or harder to install and also fix if something goes wrong?
Yes. It's my experience that anything pre-2000 been installed or fabricated, the motors aren't working. I'm seeing a huge fail rate on motors that burn up, and they either burn up and close and never open again, or they just burn up and they just stay in the open position. Small rural hospital in Alaska, they had 39 fire smoke dampers, 37 of them failed in the open position. And that's common. There was also a huge factory recall of these Honeywell actuators that were in one of the larger hospitals in Alaska that I got to test inspect. They were all bad from the factory. They have since like post 2001, the engineering has improved, and you don't see this very often, but the hospital that I found was built in 1999 with the 99% failure rate. So there is a lot of fire smoke dampers out there where the motors are just burnt up and not working anymore. And that's when you get the call, right? You're in an office. It's either too hot or too cold. You call the maintenance guy. The maintenance guy comes in, sees the motor's burnt up, the damper's closed. He disconnects the linkage. He props it open. He saves the day. But what he doesn't know is that he's just created another problem. He doesn't know what that is. This isn't anybody's fault. This is just a lack of awareness. He doesn't know that's part of the life safety system. He thinks it could just be a control damper or something. And so he props it open. And this is what you see all the time when you're doing these types of inspections.
Yeah, Sandra Hughes. I'm sorry, Sandra Reinbold.
That hasn't happened all for 2 years. Anyway, can you tell me the problem that it creates? I mean, this is kind of alarming when you're telling me all this issues, and that's a common practice. I mean, how much damage can be done, and what are the impacts to?
So back to the cost. You know that when all these systems are working, it can make a small nuisance fire into a catastrophic one, right? And I can tell you from my own personal experience and even from Dr. Milkey's study that a lot of these systems are not working, right? And HVAC life safety system. So let's say one other crucial part of the life safety system isn't working. That could happen. Like, let's say the fire alarm isn't working for whatever reason. Someone cut it or there's millions of different scenarios of why the fire alarm isn't working. So now you have a fire. You know that there's a high probability of the HVAC system not working, and the fire happens in the lower levels, and it starts to travel through the ductwork, and the people in the building have no alarm telling them that they need to get out. So now they're essentially trapped in the upper floors. Happens to the lower floors. They're safe path. They go to the stairway. They open the door. It's filled with smoke. They go to the elevator, shut down because of the fire. So these are the types of things that can happen if these systems aren't working. Granted, HVAC fire life safety system not working. Fire alarm is. Most people have time to get out. But what about the first responders? What about people that are elderly or young that can't get out? First responders need a safe path of egress to get in to help those people, and they're not going to be able to have that because they didn't test their smoke control system, and they go in the stairway, and it's filled with smoke. That just happened in New York, by the way. Stairway got filled with smoke, that big fire, and that's why people died. The stairway, even though they didn't have a smoke control system, but they propped the doors open, and the stairway was able to fill with smoke, and people lost their life because of it.
Mr. Chairman, can I have one more question, Senator, please?
Brian Bull.
Okay, so thank you for that. This actually is more important of an issue than I actually realized when I first saw this bill. So I do think this is an important issue to address. So thank you for being here. My last question, I think, today will be, in any way, does this impact carbon monoxide detectors? I had a pretty interesting experience this summer where I wish I had a carbon monoxide detector. I didn't understand how a new system worked, and I had one installed. But to me, now that I've had a real-life experience with carbon monoxide, it's really increased my awareness of how important these are. Does this impact that in any way? Will those be inspected as well? Yes or no?
No. Because, I mean, there's smoke and then there's carbon monoxide. It's two different. Carbon monoxide is – smoke is very obvious, while carbon monoxide is kind of different. But they go hand in hand in the sense that you can't breathe either of them, so and that's the real problem. So and then you're getting into indoor air quality, which I'd like to talk to you about some other time in our schools. But I would say it wouldn't affect the carbon monoxide detector. That's different.
Mr. Boothby, I'm going to speed you on up here, so I just want to make sure we can get to the.
Oh, yes, we
just have one on public test.
Yes,
testimony. Yes.
So. This just is a picture of the type of access you need. As an inspector, I know I can a lot of these systems, you're going to them, they have too small of access doors, another big fail rate that you see. I know I can fit through a 16 by 16 access door because I've cut one in and I've crawled through ductwork many times. And that's the kind of access you see. A lot of times you go there, there's a 6-inch access door. They did a visual inspection. They didn't actually drop the link, clean it, cycle it, and lubricate it. And I see that a lot with untrained professionals. Then it goes through access requirements. Basically, you know, rule of thumb, there is certain requirements, 12 by 12 access, and it gets bigger, but it has to be big enough to access the linkage and be able to work and maintain the damper. We'll get into labeling. You know, if you're in a building and you're not looking up and looking on your grid and seeing like a red dot or an FD/1-something, that's actually code to have them all labeled so you can find them. Very uncommon when I walk through a building, I don't see them because that's part of the problem why these things have not been test suspected. They're out of sight. They're out of mind. You see your horn strobes, your sprinkler heads, you see your fire extinguishers on the wall. HVAC fireless safety is buried above the ceiling, the mechanical. A lot of times I'll pop a tile and it's another 10 feet up in the air and you have to find a way to get to it and test it. I train all my technicians that we are problem solvers and that we find a way to test that damper, whether it means, you know, removing some tile and using an extension ladder. But it has to be a label of a half inch. So for inspecting and testing fire smoke dampers, employ only persons who are certified and inspected and tested fire smoke dampers and hold certifications from the International Certification Board as an HVAC fire life safety technician through a program accredited by ANSI under the ISO IEC 17024 standard. So the American National Standards Institute, if we're going to mandate people to have specific training, we want to hold the highest standard. People who are certified to test and inspect fire alarm and sprinkler systems have training that's accredited by the American National Standards Institute. The current code states anyone with the knowledge of the HVAC system can test and inspect these dampers. That's part of the problem. So a maintenance guy with 20 years experience in painting that's a jack of all trades that sometimes changes out air filters, right, can technically test and inspect these things. What we want to do is just raise the standard to meet the rest of the life safety system, right? Have to have ANSI accredited training to test fire alarm, sprinklers. We want to raise that standard, the HVAC fire life safety system, to meet that standard. That's what the ANSI accreditation is, and that's what we would have to have. That's what you'd have to have to test these systems. So how long has this been around? A long time. In my notes, it's been around since early 1900s, the standard for test inspecting fire smoke dampers. It was first introduced in 2007 in the National Fire Code. I don't want to bore you with this, so I think we got the gist of it. Here we have some pictures of the different types of dampers. You have a fire damper, a butterfly damper, both have fusible links, and then you can see this is a fire smoke damper. Down below, it's an electronic fusible link that's connected to the motor that opens and shuts. It's funny, this is the exact Honeywell model that was bad from the factory in the picture. Smoke dampers came commonly used in the 1950s. Fire dampers, 1930s.
I think there's a question from Senator Reinbold that has a... No?
No, I'm just really, Mr. Chairman, just because you looked at me, I'm really interested in hearing about the kids and the air quality in the schools. I mean, let alone the masks, which I know there's a big rally today, which I'm super excited about. Back at my school, because I passionately disagree with the basically incubating bacteria and causing, hypoxia with our children, I think has just been despicable. But I want to hear about the air quality because that tops it off. But I'm sorry, I do have to leave at 3, but I don't mean to be rushing anything, but I'm very interested in that.
That could be something off? Yes.
For sure.
Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and I know we have public testimony, so I'll try to keep it quick, and perhaps if your response can be quick too, because This bill is requiring those that inspect the dampers to meet a certain certification level so they'll really know what they're doing, and that's wonderful. My concern is about the rest of the people that work in the HVAC world that are actually the ones propping things up. And do you agree that they should also have to have this particular training? Because that seems like they're the ones that we talked about earlier that are often creating the problem.
So just like fire alarm and sprinkler systems, maintenance guys do not perform those tests. And that's what we're trying to prevent. It's usually done by a third party, right? And Richard on the call, Richard Boothby on the call had mentioned that he would have to get the same training, which is, I believe, is not in the language of the bill. We're saying that a third party contractor would have to. They're already qualified to do these inspections. And I believe it states that in the bill. They're the AHJ. They have the authority to inspect these systems. But the fire marshal usually comes in and gets the report from the contractor who has done the work and checks off the report. So you hire a fire alarm contractor. He comes in, tests everything, makes a report, passes it or fails it. If it's failed, he writes it down, and then the fire chief inspects that report.
Mr. Hughes? My point is the inspectors, yes, they need to be qualified and certified and have this high level, but our maintenance and installation people that are just working on HVAC systems, it seems to me they need to have this knowledge, and I'm just wondering if you agree with that, or is it okay that they keep going and not having an awareness? It seems like anybody who gets certified to do HVAC maintenance installation should have some kind of training not to fix these and not to inspect them, but to understand what they are and not to prop them up or close them off or that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and that's what this bill will help do, is raise awareness to the problem. But it's a conflict of interest to have someone that works at that building test the life safety system. It's not common practice. And no maintenance guy tests the fire alarm. Maintenance guys don't test the sprinkler system, and they should definitely stay away from the HVAC fire.
And follow up, I'm not suggesting that they do. I'm just suggesting that they have knowledge of these systems, and so that they're not putting a soda can and propping them up.
And by enforcing these inspections, to have people that are certified, that have general knowledge of it, the maintenance guy will become knowledgeable as well. Because, you know, generally a maintenance guy walks around with you, and I've educated many maintenance guys in hospitals of the severity and what these systems do. Absolutely.
All right. At this time, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony. Is anyone here in the room would like to testify on SB 169? Seeing none, we'll go to the phone lines. We have Scott Hammond. Scott, if you can put yourself on the record, state any affiliation you wish, and provide a couple 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yeah, through the chair, for the record, my name is Scott Hammond. I'm the Director of Research at the National Energy Management Institute Committee, NEMIC. I've worked in the HVAC industry since 1986. I'm also a technical committee member for the International Certification Board, which has developed and maintained several of the certifications that Mr. Scher has been talking about. Each of these certifications are accredited by the American National Standards Institute, and I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 169. During Mr. Shurig's testimony, when he talked about the University of Maryland study and 47.5% of the dampers needing some type of repair, this bill creates an awareness through educating people, and at the same time, having a requirement that a skilled, trained, and certified workforce perform the periodic inspections of fire dampers, smoke dampers, as well as smoke control systems, I think is a very good thing. And like I said, I'm speaking in support of the bill. And thanks for the opportunity to give testimony on Senate Bill 169. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Next, we have Elizabeth Johnston. Elizabeth, if you can state your name and any affiliation and provide 2 minutes for your testimony.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. My name is Elizabeth Johnston. I am a professional electrical engineer and a professional fire protection engineer. I serve on the Alaska Board of Licensure for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. I'm calling in on this bill because I wanted to point out a couple things. The state of Alaska State Fire Marshal has adopted the International Fire Code already. The International Fire Code does require damper inspections under its acceptance testing requirements in Chapter 909, which says that the damper shall be tested for functioning in their installed condition. So this legislation does duplicate somewhat a code requirement in place in our state by telling the Department of Public Safety to adopt regulations when it's already adopted this code. The state has not yet currently adopted NFPA 80, NFPA 92, or NFPA 105 that are referenced in this legislation, but those codes do speak to damper inspections and require those every 6 years for healthcare facilities and 4 years for non-healthcare facilities. So I believe those are good references and think they should be included in the legislation. The legislation does set a standard of who can perform these legislations, but it limits them to those who have a certification from the American National Standards Institute, which is actually a good certification. And it also limits it to people who participate in the fire life safety inspection program of the state or the municipality. My concern is it does not allow qualified fire protection, mechanical, controls, or electrical engineers who may be qualified by their training and experience to do these inspections. And I believe this bill should be amended to allow this work to be done by engineers without a separate ANSI certification, as it is within our knowledge and experience. And your proposed requirement in this bill does exceed that in the IFC and NFPA codes. And as such, I don't think it should go as currently proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for your testimony today. Seeing no one else online to testify, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. Are there any final questions for the committee members? Yeah, Senator Casella, if you have a question, and then we'll leave it up to you also for a wrap-up.
Thank you. And I was wondering if Jen could comment in relation to the final public testimony and in regards to the standards.
Yeah. No, she brought up some good points. Fire safety engineers, I believe, should be able to I was under the impression that their accreditation was ANSI accredited, and I am more than willing to work with them to get the bill amended to allow them to continue to do the great work that they've done. This is just a mere oversight that should be easily worked out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take a quick at ease. We're back on the record. Any closing comments for the bill sponsor and staff? Seeing none, thank you for bringing the Senate Bill 156 to our committee's attention. And we'll set this bill aside and ask for amendments to be turned in to Ledge Legal by Thursday at 10, or let us know if you plan to have amendments so we can go off for further scheduling for this piece of legislation. I'm sorry. I was thinking about Tuesday. 169 is this bill dealing with fire dampeners. Again, amendments are due, or let our office know if you have amendments that are turned into Ledge Legal by Thursday the 24th at 10 a.m. This upcoming Thursday, the committee will meet to consider bills previously heard and scheduled, and that concludes our business for this afternoon. And take another brief at ease. Thank you, Bill. All right, and then Tuesday, one of our committee members are over ecstatic to hear 156 on Tuesday the 1st. That concludes our business for this afternoon, and we are adjourned at 2:59 p.m.